This podcast is one of the many good ones on the Self Defense Radio Network.
Hi, this is Chaz. When I want to listen to a show with practical information from an everyday guy who can't carry a cop just like me, I listen to my good friend Bob Main. Now on with the show.
Hi, folks. I'm Bob Main. Welcome to the Handgun World podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. This is episode number 438 of a practical show done by a practical guy, and that is me. You know, I'm only a few episodes now away from taking my break, about a six-week break that I'm going to take just to kind of step back and, as I've mentioned before, just to think about the direction of the Handgun World podcast and where I want to take this show, what I want to do with it, and so forth. You can look forward to a lot of real good guest host submissions that I have received lately. Law enforcement officers, concealed carry, just regular concealed carry people, a prominent instructor, people like that have sent me excellent submissions. And I think you're really going to like it. You're going to have some real good material to listen to while I'm taking a little bit of a hiatus or sabbatical or whatever. And I'll be back full strength January 15th doing the Handgun World podcast with a new direction. And I think you're going to like it a lot. So this week I'm talking about dueling M&Ps. Dueling M&Ps. Let me explain to you. It's very possible, you might be real surprised to hear Bob Main say this, but it's very possible I might switch to M&P handguns for concealed carry. Yeah, I know, I love Glocks. I'm always going to own Glocks. I'm always going to shoot Glocks. I'm probably going to be carrying Glocks, especially a Glock 19, because I still think the Glock 19 is probably the perfect concealed carry gun for a lot of reasons. No, I'm not a Glock fanboy. I mean, come on, folks. If I was a Glock fanboy, would I be making a episode right now called Dueling M&Ps and talking about the fact that I might become a Smith & Wesson M&P carrier? So, hey, any comments about me being a Glock fanboy, those are ridiculous comments. But Smith & Wesson has done some things lately that I really like. So most of you know, a few weeks back, I acquired an M&P shield, the 2.0 M&P shield. I have a regular version 1 M&P shield. I acquired a 2.0 shield that I'm holding in my hand right now. By the way, all ammunition is cleared out of this room, and I'm going to rack the slide one more time. I'm going to visually inspect the chamber. I'm also going to put my finger in there to make sure that it is clear inside the chamber. That's the way I believe that you should properly clear a gun. And I'm going to set it on the table right now and leave the action open. I also have an M&P 2.0 compact, which I'm going to talk about. Let me open up that slide, visually inspect the chamber, physically inspect it with my finger. Oh, Bob, don't put your finger in there and inspect it, because, wow, if that slide slams home, it's going to hurt your finger. Okay, so what? I'm a tough guy. I don't mean tough guy. I don't mean like a tough guy that is the kind of guy that brags about strength and bravado and all that. That's not the kind of tough guy I mean. I just mean, hey, I can handle a lot, okay? So if the slide goes forward and hurts my poor little pinky while I'm checking the chamber, small price to pay, in my opinion, to make sure that it's not loaded. And I'll leave this action open as well. For years, I have said that I had wished that Smith & Wesson would make a pistol the same size and the same capacity as a Glock 19. I could not, you know, bring myself to carry M&Ps because the full size M&P for a carry gun, that's too big for me. Too big for me. For a carry gun. Now you might, for you it might be different, but hey, everybody's different. So for me, it's a little bit too large. The M&P 9C or the M&P 40C, those guns didn't make much sense for me either because I was down to 12 rounds in a magazine for a gun that really, essentially, it was the same size or almost the same size as a Glock 19. You know, check it out. If you own an M&P 9C or an M&P 40C, put it right next to a Glock 19. Yeah, it's smaller, but not much. And I think the weight was about the same. So I didn't see the point in sacrificing those three rounds in that capacity. Plus, I absolutely hated the version 1 triggers on M&Ps. And, you know, I thought, hey, if I switch to an M&P, then I got to spend $150 or so for one of those Apex triggers and things, and I just didn't see the point. So I stuck with my Glocks. Well, you've probably seen a lot of reviews. There's a lot of YouTube reviews on the M&P 2.0 Compact. And, wow, guess what? Smith & Wesson has made a Glock 19 size handgun with the same type of capacity. Wow. So I bought one. Now, you know me. I bought it without the thumb safety. No thumb safety. So let me tell you what I like about these and why I might switch to them and why I think they're real good guns. And by the way, both of these I have now had a chance to shoot. As you know, I really don't like to review a gun unless I've had a chance to shoot it. And I really don't like reviewing accessories and things like that unless I've had a chance to use them. So I bought this Smith & Wesson Shield 2.0. Let's start with this. I talked about it in an episode a few weeks ago, but I promised I would come back on this podcast and talk about it after I shot it. So Ben Branham and I had Paul Carlson from the Safety Solutions Academy come to San Antonio and teach critical defensive handgun, which I'm going to talk a little bit about that a little bit later in this episode. Phenomenal class. So the first day I shot two different shields. I shot my version 1 shield and I shot my Shield 2.0 for the entire first day. And I think I went through about 350 rounds total. So I had a chance to shoot both these pistols a pretty good bit. For me, I think the trigger on the 2.0 pistols by M&P is a lot better. I think the trigger is a lot better. I think it's definitely good enough, a lot better than where I don't have to go out and get an Apex trigger. Now, on my version 1 pistol, I wanted to try an experiment because a gunsmith that I knew talked me into it. And I had an Apex trigger shoe or trigger face, whatever name you want to call it. A flat trigger shoe put in there. No other parts were changed. Nothing else was done to the gun. I do like that flat trigger. So maybe what I might do is do the same thing to this 2.0, get one of those Apex flat trigger shoes or flat trigger face, whatever you want to call it, because I kind of like that flat trigger feel. The existing M&P triggers out of the box, they don't bother me. I just kind of like the flat better. What's been your experience? Any of you out there that own an M&P, what's been your experience? Have you used one of those? Have you not? Again, I'm not talking about all the internal parts of the Apex trigger. I'm just talking about if you've changed out the shoe and the face of that trigger, whatever. Can't remember exactly the name of it. So anyway, I shot my stock sights. You know, this gun comes, like all M&Ps do, out of the box with, white 3-dot sights. I'm not incredibly crazy about them, but I wanted to shoot it with these, stock sights. So I shot this gun completely stock. Well, except for one thing, which I'm going to get to in a little while. But I liked it. I liked it. Shot very well. My version 1 has Trijicon HD sights with an orange front sight. Just totally love that gun. Actually, that's my son's gun. I gave that to him as a gift a couple of years ago. And when he turns 21, I'm sure that's the gun that he'll probably start carrying when he gets his concealed carry license. So, this 2.0 version, I noticed in shooting it that the grip really helps me a lot. The grip texture helps me a lot. It helps me to remain a little bit more accurate with the gun. It doesn't inherently make the gun itself more accurate, but because I can get a good grip that does, and the gun does not move in my hand, key factor, I'll say that again, because the gun does not move much in my hand when shooting it, that helps me to be more accurate. Now, you still have to have a really good solid crush, squeeze grip on the gun. You know, you gotta be squeezing the snot out of the gun when you shoot it. If you got a problem with recoil, you're probably not holding your gun tight enough. And so, and I do like to use thumbs forward grip, but I really, you know, get a good solid grip on the pistol. My hands, my fingers are so long on my hands that actually, the heel of my weak hand, my left hand, my other shooting hand. Sorry. Shouldn't call it my weak hand. I should call it my other shooting hand. The heel can't quite completely get onto the grip because this grip's too small for me. But can't do anything about that with the shield. Shield does not have interchangeable back straps. But it's not so small that it messes me up. It's just fine. So now, let's talk about the magazine, the two magazines that come with the Shield 2.0. They're the regular 8-round magazines and 7-round magazines that you're used to. The thing about it is that I don't like is on the 8-round magazine, it's got the same texture as the grip does. It feels good at first. It's got the same texture. It feels good. The issue is the same issue as with almost all Shield pistols, is that when I go to do a reload, it doesn't like to drop free. And it's even worse because of the texture that Smith & Wesson has put on the back of the base plate, the texture that matches the grip texture. So I shot this gun using Paul Carlson's Plan B base pads. And by the way, the version 1 mags are the same as the version 2 mags. They're interchangeable. That is a good thing by Smith & Wesson. That was very, very smart. Same thing on the M&P 2.0 compact, and I'll get to that when I get to that gun. So, using the Plan B, matter of fact, Paul made a comment when I was doing a reload. He said, "Hey, Bob, I like how that magazine just flies right out of that gun. Gee, I wonder why that is." And we got ourselves a little laugh out of it. It's because I'm using his Plan B magazines, magazine base plates. Not a different magazine. It's just different base plate. Shieldplanb.com is where you can find those. I think Paul's changing the name, but I'll let him discuss that. But shieldplanb.com. So that's the setup, and I put about 200 rounds, performed very well. I really like the Smith & Wesson Shield for a nice, small, compact 9mm that's easy to shoot. That's what I love so much about this gun, is that it's easy to shoot. It's the easiest single-stack 9mm pistol. It's the easiest to shoot that I've ever shot, and I've shot a lot of them. I've shot the Glock 43, I've shot the Kar PM9, I've shot the Ruger LC9. I've shot the Taurus 9mm single stack, which I can't remember the exact name of it. Is it the 709 Slim or something like that? Let's see, what else? What other single stacks? Oh, I've shot the SIG 938, which I'm not crazy about. But the way that this M&P Shield conceals is nice. So, guess what? This M&P Shield 2.0 9mm has become my go-to backup gun. This has become my go-to backup gun. Not a primary carry because it doesn't hold enough capacity, but wow. You know what? If I did my part, by the way, the gun did its part. There were a few shots that I missed, probably like a half a dozen that I missed during that first day of Paul's class with this gun, but it sure was not the M&P Shield's fault that I missed. it was everything else. It was the wind, and it was the ammo, and it was the sun was in my eyes, and I wasn't wearing the right shoes, and I had the wrong shirt on, and my hat was irritating me, and my eye protection was giving me a problem, and, you know, it was all those other excuses. It wasn't me, right? Couldn't have been me, could it? Yeah, of course it was me. The gun did its part. So I give this Shield 2.0 a very high rating. I really like the gun. I think it's a winner, just like the original Shield is a winner. I think this one is too. I love how the trigger breaks on this gun. I think it breaks just a little bit better. Just a little bit better. It just seems to be a little smoother, you know, and I just really like it. I think it's a well done trigger. And by the time this gun has its 1,000 round trigger job, that of course all of you know, I strongly recommend that all of you give whatever gun you're going to carry a 1,000 round trigger job. Go back to my older episodes, either episode 145 or 147. I can't remember which one. I explained what a 1,000 round trigger job is. I think this trigger will be excellent. Still might put the Apex flat trigger in it, just changing out the trigger shoe. Not quite certain about that yet. Okay. Now, if you got any comments or questions about what I've covered, comments or anything, I love getting voicemails. Area code 210-646-1727. Once again, that's 210-646-1727, and ask a question. You can be on the Handgun World podcast, and I'll respond to you. And, you know, if you got a comment, that would be great. You want to send me an email, bob@handgunworld.com. That's bob@handgunworld.com. Now, I want to talk about the 2.0 compact, the M&P 2.0 compact, because I got one of these, too. And so I want to talk about it. By the way, this show is sponsored by Concealment Solutions. And I used Concealment Solutions holsters for both of these during that class. I used a Cobra outside the waistband holster for the Shield and a Cobra outside the waistband holster for the M&P Compact. Guess what? I had Jason at Concealment Solutions make a Cobra for a full-size M&P for me a few years ago. This M&P Compact fits in the same holster as my full-size M&P holster. So if you have a full-size Smith & Wesson M&P holster, chances are probably 99% this compact gun is going to fit in there. That is a very good thing. Once again, about the M&P 2.0, it's the Glock 19 size. And I took out my, you know, after I bought this pistol and brought it home, first thing I did was put it up against my Glock 19. And, I mean, they're almost identical in size. Almost identical. The M&P 2.0 has actually a little bit longer sight radius because the rear sight comes all the way to the back of the slide, whereas with Glock, on a Glock it doesn't. I think the rear sight's like a quarter of an inch from the back of the slide. So you get a little bit better sight radius. That is assuming that you're using the stock sights. So how about we take a quick break, and I'm going to be right back talking about my M&P 2.0 9mm compact. Be right back.
Hey, this is Paul Lathrop from the Polite Society podcast. You know, a long time ago I was looking for a tactical mall ninja podcast, and I fell upon this one. And I like this much better. You're listening to Bob Main and the Handgun World podcast, a practical show for a practical guy like me.
Okay, the M&P 2.0 Compact. Paul Carlson had one that he was testing and evaluating. And so I got a chance to shoot it. I shot two full magazines with it. Ben Branham, I think, shot the entire second day of the class with it. So you might also want to tune in to listen to what he has to say on the Modern Self-Protection podcast about it. He might be talking about it as well. Again, one of the benefits, it fit into my full-size M&P holster. I think that was a great benefit. So this gun is also still in stock configuration with the three-dot sights, the painted white three-dot sights. It's going to get Trijicon HDXR sights because those are now my favorite sights. I use the medium backstrap on this because of my hand, because of the size of my hand. I tried putting the small backstrap on it, and I, again, just same problem as with the shield. My fingers wrap around the grip so much because they're so long that when I put the small backstrap on it, I can't, my weak hand only touches my fingers. It doesn't touch any of the grip. Oh, there I go again. What's wrong with me? Calling it my weak hand. It's not my weak hand. It's my other shooting hand. My other fighting hand. Okay. My other fighting hand, my other shooting hand wasn't feeling anything but fingers when I grabbed the gun. So I put the medium-sized backstrap on it. Medium-sized backstrap is fine for my hands. I could actually shoot it with the large backstrap, but I don't need to. The medium's going to be just fine. This particular gun is unshot. The one I shot, identical to this one, is the one that Paul Carlson had at his critical defensive handgun class that he came down here and taught a few weeks ago in San Antonio. Fantastic class. I'll be talking about that shortly. So what I like and what I don't like about this gun, I like the grip texture. I really do like the 2.0 grip texture. Now, the 2.0 grip texture is probably not good if you carry a gun like this and you're not wearing a t-shirt. I like to outside the waistband carry now. I carry behind my strong side hip, and I carry outside the waist in a Cobra outside the waistband holster. It's so easy to conceal. I'm just as fast as appendix carry, so that's the way I do it. But I always wear a t-shirt. Always wear a t-shirt. And I mean always wear a t-shirt, no matter what the temperature is. I don't care if it's 100 degrees or if it's a beautiful, glorious day like today in San Antonio, November 17th, and it's like, you know, 71 degrees out and a nice light breeze. I love South Texas this time of the year. This is why those of us who live here, this is why we live here. It's why we live in South Texas, because of this is the perfect time of the year, you know, from about the end of October to middle of April, even the end of April, October through April. Fantastic weather here. So while all you Yankees, like I used to be, are up there freezing your schnockers off in January or February, we're going to be down here enjoying some nice 60-degree weather. Ha, 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 ha. Okay, yeah, you can make fun of me in July and August when it's 105. Okay, I'm getting off topic. I always wear a t-shirt, so this grip texture does not bother me. Does not bother me in the slightest. And I really like it. For the same benefit as I mentioned earlier when I was talking about my 2.0 shield. Smith & Wesson, you've done a good job with the grip texture. Now, here's a suggestion I might have for you. If it's a little bit too rough for you, if you like to have the rougher texture, but it's too rough because you do carry this gun and the grip does touch your bare skin, I think a little bit of light sandpaper to reduce some of the sharpness of the grip might be a good option. I'm not going to do that. One thing I think is going to happen with this gun and with the shield, the more I shoot it, the more thousands of rounds I shoot it, my hand is probably going to wear down some of the grip texture. But this grip texture is not so bad that it, you know, it doesn't make my hands bleed or scratch my hands or anything like that. You know, I don't have soft hands. Okay, so it's not that rough. It doesn't beat me up. The shootability of it's great. I mean, it recoils less than my Glock 19. There's no question about it. With the same exact ammo, it recoils less, even less than my fifth generation Glock 19, because I shot my fifth generation Glock 19 for the second day of Paul's class. I didn't have this M&P compact yet at that time. And, of course, love my Glock 19 Gen 5. Really like it. I'm going to be doing a show about that coming up. I did a YouTube video. Go to my YouTube channel. If some of you have never checked it out, on YouTube, just search Handgun World. You'll find me. And I just did a review on my Glock 19 Gen 5, which seems to be getting a lot of views and a lot of good positive feedback. So go check that out. This M&P 2.0 compact, you know, 15 rounds in the magazine, 15 rounds. One genius thing I think that Smith & Wesson did. Genius thing. In the box comes two grip sleeves. Sleeves that are very similar to the Smith & Wesson Shield grip sleeves. And that enables you to take a 17-round mag, which I have in my hand right now, an M&P 17-round mag, and put it in your M&P 9 compact, and that sleeve fills that gap. And it's great. It's fantastic. Matter of fact, one of the things, you know what else is nice? From my hands, at least, I don't know if this is going to work for you, but if I put the 17-round mag in here with the grip sleeve, it's textured, by the way. It's textured. If I put the 17-round mag in this gun with the grip sleeve and I bring my other shooting hand, my other fighting hand, onto the pistol, it gives the pinky from my other fighting hand a place to rest. Isn't that kind of cool? And it sort of gives me even a little bit more leverage, even a little bit more leverage. When I compete with this gun, like if I go shoot IDPA stock service pistol, I'll probably use this 17-round mag with the grip sleeve. I don't think I could shoot CCP division in IDPA, that's concealed carry pistol, with the 17-round mag, because I don't think that would fit in the box, but I'm pretty sure I could shoot that division with the 15-round mag. So that's kind of cool, that those sleeves that they put in there. And I think they give me four back straps too. I don't have the box with me, but I think there's four back straps that come with this M&P compact. If I'm wrong about that, then it's three, but I think it might be four, I think. So you can make this gun fit anybody's hands. And that's good. It does not need to have a beaver tail. One thing about the 2.0 pistols by Smith & Wesson, no beaver tails on them. I don't think they're needed. I really don't. I never could figure out what the purpose of the beaver tail was on the original full size M&P 2.0. If you know how to grip a pistol right, I don't think you need that beaver tail. And if the gun's moving around too much in your hand, then get some training. Come to one of my classes, and we'll teach you how to properly grip a pistol so that it doesn't move around so much, and so you can control recoil. So that's a big positive, is that, again, this grip helps me control the recoil. It's a very shootable gun to begin with. It's got a nice rail on it. The front slide serrations. Let's talk about the front slide serrations. They are useless. They're stupid. I don't even know why Smith & Wesson put them on here. Maybe for looks. They're too far down towards the bottom of the slide. They need to be up higher. They need to be up higher, Smith & Wesson. Higher up on the slide. So that if someone's going to use those, where your fingers and where your thumb is on your other fighting hand, that's where they need to be. Your fingers and thumb aren't down here towards the bottom of the slide. So, yeah, there's a negative. Not a smart move. Trigger's great. Trigger's a whole lot better than the version 1 M&Ps. Again, this is one of the reasons why I never carried M&Ps, because I just couldn't stand the triggers. On this 2.0, just like the Shield 2.0, breaks very nicely. You know, nice smooth break. And when the gun cycles, good reset, nice smooth break again. Once it has 1,000 or 2,000 round trigger job, it's going to be fantastic. Maybe I will be putting on, like I said, the flat trigger, the flat Apex trigger shoe, and Trigicon XD sights on here with the orange front dight, XR version, I believe. Magazine release button, real nice, as usual. Smith & Wesson M&P has always done a nice job with the magazine release button. It's reversible. Also, slide release, which I don't use and I don't teach people to use the slide release to chamber a new round once you reload. Personal preference. Some people say it's okay. That's fine. If you think it's okay, do that. I'm not going to teach that just because I think it's a bad habit to get into. Because think about clearing malfunctions. Think about clearing malfunctions. You got to use your other fighting hand to rack that slide to do a tap and a rack to clear just a regular malfunction, don't you? Well, if you're going to get used to that motion clearing malfunctions, why not get used to that motion chambering around? If you're playing gun games, IDPA, USPSA, whatever, okay, use a slide stop, slide release, whatever the heck name you want to give it. It's ambidextrous, but I don't know. Personal preference, I don't want to create a training scar. I don't want to start using that. Some people think it's a negative that the version 2.0 of the Smith & Wesson pistols, that they don't, that the slide doesn't automatically go forward when you slam the fresh magazine in there with force. The version 1s do that, especially when they're nice and broken in. Version 2s don't do that. I don't think that's a negative. I really don't. Look at it this way, folks. You know, here's my, you might disagree. That's fine. If you want to disagree with me, you're always welcome to disagree with me. As I've mentioned many times, I welcome disagreements as long as it's well thought out and as long as, you know, you have done your research, you can provide me with clear reasons why you disagree. Send me a voicemail or an email. I welcome it. And as most of you know, I've been known to change my mind on things. If somebody who disagrees with me can point out, you know, cohesively why I'm wrong, but I never really thought that it was much of an asset to have that slide slamming forward and that slide slamming home when you inserted a magazine. It kind of threw my timing off, especially when I was shooting a competition match. You know, it was like I'd put that magazine in, you know, boom. And then I would be coming over the top of the pistol with my other fighting hand to chamber the round and, oh, guess what? The gun did it already by itself. Oh, okay. Hey, I can keep shooting right now. You know, I mean, that extra quarter of a second of thinking or whatever, it used to kind of just throw me off. So it doesn't do that with the 2.0 pistols anymore. And I don't care. I like that. I think that's good. I think that's good. They've made no other changes to it. I mean, it still takes down the same way. Some people used to complain about the slide finish on M&Ps, M&P pistols. I guess I haven't, these haven't gone in and out of the holster enough to be a problem. My version 1 shield, you know, it's got a little bit of holster wear in the normal spots, but, you know, that's to be expected. Take care of your guns. Take care of your guns, lube them up. Put a little light film, really super light film of lubrication on the gun when you put it back in the safe after you get done carrying it, and it's probably not going to rust. Hasn't for me. And again, like I said, I wear t-shirts, so I don't sweat on the guns. So that'll probably keep them from rusting as well. So there you go, dueling M&Ps. I like them. I really like them. I like this compact size of the Smith & Wesson 2.0 compact. I really like it. It's almost the same size as the Glock 19. You know, I mean, the differences between this and a Glock 19 is like minuscule. Maybe like a 16th of an inch. It does weigh 3 or 4 ounces more unloaded. About 3 or 4 ounces more. That's not a big deal. You know, 3 or 4 ounces, I try to stay in relatively decent shape. Matter of fact, as soon as I get done recording this podcast, my son and I are going to the gym because, you know, we believe that physical fitness is a big part of self-defense. Huge, huge part of self-defense. So what's 3 or 4 ounces going to do? That's not going to bother me if it's a little bit heavier. You know, it's not going to bother me at all. People are probably going to like appendix carrying this pistol as well, because it's going to appendix carry probably just like a Glock 19. If you've got experience already with this M&P 2.0 compact, if you have experience appendix carrying, let us know. We'd love to hear it. Okay? So there's my thoughts on dueling M&Ps. Now, Paul Carlson's critical defensive handgun class. Good stuff. Just good stuff. One thing I like about Paul's teaching style is he gets the students thinking on the range, thinking about whether you should shoot, whether you should not shoot. If you do shoot, where are you going to shoot them? And making those critical split-second decisions that are so important in a gunfight. You know, that's the biggest compliment I've got on Paul's class. Some of the things I'm not completely in sync with Paul. I'm not a big fan of moving laterally and then planting my feet again and taking a shot, because if I'm moving in a gunfight, why do I want to stop and plant my feet again? Because now I've exposed myself and I've made myself an easier target to hit. I've made myself an easier target to hit for the bad guy. But that's about the only thing that, that was pretty much about the only constructive criticism that I have. Very constructive about Paul's class. Otherwise, outstanding, outstanding class. You know, the decisions you have to make, the different shapes you shoot, the different colors, you know, even simple math problems before you shoot to try to make sure, hey, is this really a target that I want to shoot? Is this really a target? Is this really a bad guy? Or is this an innocent? Or is this somebody that's a concealed carrier that's a good guy trying to end the problem? Very good stuff. Very good stuff. I highly recommend taking Paul Carlson's critical defensive handgun from the Safety Solutions Academy. If you can get to one of those classes, I highly recommend it. And I think I shot a total of about somewhere around 700 and 725 rounds. So well done, Paul. Good job. And I shot my Glock 19 Gen 5, which ran perfectly, and it was wonderful. The trigger, wow! I personally think the triggers on the new Generation 5 Glocks are superior than the other generations. I think they are. But anyway, this podcast is dueling M&Ps, not the Glock 19 Gen 5. I'll get to that later in a different show. Okay, I got some listener feedback. I got an interesting story here from a listener that you need to hear. So quick break, and you're going to hear this. This is good stuff.
It was one of the worst mass murders committed by a single person. It happened down south. A lunatic killed 27 people, including his own mother, in a single pass. The killer used a six-shot revolver and a knife. Mass murderers find whatever tools they need, and those tools don't need to be sporting rifles or high-capacity clips. A slow reloading revolver is all this fellow needed. Banning clips will not prevent a madman's massacre, but that doesn't matter to the gun control industry, who thinks inanimate objects are evil but ignore the deranged people who misuse them. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Okay, you got to hear this. This is from one of my listeners. Hi, Bob. This is Rick. Oh, and by the way, I'm not going to be giving lots of details because I want to protect the privacy of these people. Hi, Bob. This is Rick. I took a class with you in Ohio. That's when Ben Branham and I went up to Ohio a while back. And my wife, her name is Autumn. She took the class with me. Autumn has some things that she deals with, so she goes to meetings to deal with it. And he said, there's a guy that is older than her, about 61 years old, that walks with a cane. And he's been wanting to start conversation with her and started texting with her. This is Autumn, Rick's wife. She felt sorry for the guy because he was older, so she befriended him. And he asked her over for a coffee. And he tries to smoke pot in front of her. And she told him she does not do that and she can't do that because of her profession. And she's trying to get everything back in order and everything like that. So he said today, after one of the meetings that she went to, he pulled up beside her and he asked her to get in his car. Not thinking, she did. He took off with her, locked the door and locked the windows, and proceeded to smoke pot in the car and drive around, not letting her out of the vehicle, and didn't bring her back for after 20 minutes. She was completely freaked out and didn't know what to do. So, Bob, here's where I need your advice. She wants me to talk to him, and obviously I want to. I'm not a hothead. I carry every day, and I avoid situations like this. However, I think I need to deal with this one. I am 45. He's 61 with a cane. If I show up at his doorstep carrying, I've just brought a gun into the fight. I don't intend on hitting him or having contact with him, just speaking with him, and I need your advice on how to handle the situation. Well, Rick also recorded the conversation that he had with this guy, who basically was harassing his wife. And he said it was okay for me to play it for you. So here it is.
Hello.
Hello. Hi, Phil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rick.
Yeah. What happened today? No. No. Oh. I'm not coming in.
What's up? What happened?
Yeah. Why don't you tell me?
I don't know.
You went for a joyride with Autumn today in the parking lot. Everyone saw it.
Okay. We went.
No. I know what happened.
Okay.
Everybody else saw what happened.
Okay. I don't think we went for a joyride.
You wouldn't let her out of the car?
What?
You smoked pot around her? Don't say anymore, okay? This is me coming nicely and saying she wants you to stay away from her.
Okay.
She doesn't want you to text her, call her, or attend meetings with her.
Okay.
This is me coming nicely, threatening. We didn't know whether or not to get the cops involved.
Oh, my.
This is me asking you nicely.
Okay.
Stay away from me.
Are you asking me not to go to meetings?
No. Just find another one.
I'm not gonna ask you that.
You know what? I'm not asking. I'm telling you. She doesn't want you around her. After today, she doesn't want you around her. If I have to come back here, you're going to hope I bring the cops with me. I'm telling you nicely.
Okay, Rick. I apologize to you and to her. Okay, please ask my apologies a lot. I meant no harm.
Okay, Rick, I'd like to compliment you. I thought you did a real good job of not escalating the situation. I thought that even though you meant business and you were there and he knew you meant business, you were calm. You were calm. You didn't raise your voice. You used a de-escalating type of a voice. You didn't threaten. You didn't swear at him or anything like that. You know, Rick said he was carrying during that whole situation. And, you know, Rick's a student of ours, and I know because, and he came through our class. You know, we talk a lot and we teach a lot about the fact that, you know, the gun is not the answer to everything. The gun is not the answer to everything. And I know Rick, and I don't think that unless it was absolutely 100% necessary that Rick had to use his gun to save his life, I know Ricky wouldn't have done it. And so I thought you did a very, very good job of de-escalating. My only suggestion with you, Rick, if that ever happens again, you need to do something like that. How about taking somebody with you? How about not going there alone, taking somebody with you? I think that would be a good idea. You know, if you know a cop you can take with you, great, take a cop, but just take somebody with you. for several reasons, to act as a witness. And also, you know, if the guy sees two people at his door instead of one, he might be a whole lot less likely to do anything. Although I know some of you might be thinking, well, that might look more intimidating to the guy, because there's two people at his door. Maybe what you could do is take somebody with you, but take the person that's with you, have the person with you, maybe stand back 6 to 8 feet away from the door so that they're not quite so intimidating. But they're there. They're there as a witness. They're there to help out if possible. And let's see. He said he had to walk a fine line, and yeah, he did. He said he did not want to escalate the confrontation, and I don't believe that he did. And Rick, I think you did a real good job. By the way, he said his wife is going to be carrying a lot more now. She owns a shield, and she's going to be carrying a lot more. Yeah. See, this is why we carry, folks, especially you ladies out there. This is why you carry, especially you ladies out there. Well, everybody who's eligible to carry should carry. But ladies, man, you don't know when this stuff's going to happen. Don't get in the car. By the way, don't get in the car just because you feel sorry for the guy. I don't care if you feel sorry for the guy. Too bad. Feel sorry for him. Hurt his feelings. Who cares? Don't get in the car. But, Rick, good job de-escalating. Carry your guns, folks. I think I told you guys, I put it on Facebook. I had a situation where I went to get my mail after dark, and my mailbox is about a block and a half away from my house. You know, it's one of those community mailbox things where there's, you know, 10 or 12 mailboxes for the houses that are on that street, and it's all in one spot. And I go out there after dark one day to try to get my mail, and I had a flashlight in my left hand, which I always do whenever I'm walking out in the dark. I got a flashlight in my left hand, a nice surefire flashlight. And I go to my mailbox, I open it up, I get my mail, I close my box, and on the way home, a guy appeared out of nowhere, about 6'2", young guy, maybe 27, 28 years old, just absolutely showed up out of nowhere. I couldn't see him, it was dark. He said hi to me, and I'm like, whoa, what's up here? Because he got pretty close to me, and he had a backpack. And he said hi to me, and because I didn't know what was going on, I flashed my flashlight towards him. I didn't flash him in the face, but he saw a pretty bright light pretty much right on his chest. And I said, hi, how are you? How you doing? And he identified himself, and then he seemed like he was a pretty nice guy. I also had my hand on my Smith & Wesson shield underneath my shirt, so he couldn't tell that I had my hand on my gun. It was concealed. You know, I had my mail underneath my arm. And I did all that in pretty much about a split second. And we walked together the block back towards my house. And he explained to me that, you know, he worked at the local gas station and he was walking home, taking a shortcut, and that he was new to the neighborhood and that he was living with his girlfriend in the neighborhood. And, which is why I didn't know who he was, because I had never seen the guy before in my neighborhood. But, you know, this is why alternative methods before you have to go to a gun is so important. My flashlight. I thought that was a good move on my part. Hit him with the flashlight, not hit him physically, but shine that flashlight right into his chest. And, you know, some people say, well, why didn't you shine it in his face? Well, I didn't feel the need to shine it in his face at that time, but if I needed to, I would have. But at least that way he knew that, you know what, I was prepared. And you know what, later on thinking about it, he didn't mean any harm to me. He didn't. It was just coincidence that we were in the same spot at the same time in a dark neighborhood. And he was probably telling me the truth. He was working home, walking home from his job at a convenience store nearby. But, you know, at least he got the picture that, you know, if he did mean something bad, I had a pretty bright flashlight and he didn't know it. I know he didn't know it. But I had my hand on my shield pistol. So we talked. We had a nice friendly conversation for the one block walk home. When we got to my house, I said, okay, well, I'm stopping here. I'll talk to you later. And he turned around and introduced himself, and I don't even remember his name, but he said, hey, nice to meet you. Nice talking to you. My name is so-and-so. and I hope I see you around again sometime. And I said, yeah. I said, I'm Bob. Nice talking to you. And that was it. I went into my home. So it was probably nothing bad, but folks, this is why you need to carry stuff with you for your own good. A flashlight, a knife, and a gun. If it's legal, if you're in a spot where a good flashlight, a knife, and a gun is legal, what's wrong with you if you don't have them on you? And easily accessible. You know, Rick, thanks for sharing that story. I appreciate that. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share it here publicly. I'd like to get some of your feedback. Like I said, I think that Rick handled the situation, you know, fairly well, but maybe there's some improvements that you think other listeners could benefit from and that maybe Rick could benefit from. So how about some voicemails again? 210-646-1727. Ben Branham and I just put 4 new videos on the Shooters Club. So if you like my podcast, if you like what you hear and you want to support me, you notice I don't have a lot of commercials. How about joining the Shooters Club? Over 70 educational videos. Over 70 educational videos. 4 new ones we just put up recently on how to become better with your handgun, better shooting it, better at defending yourself with it. And they don't take the place of live training, but they're very instructional. It's only going to be $8 a month or $75 a year. Hey, you're doing your Christmas shopping now. I know you are. Don't forget about my Amazon store. Make your Amazon purchases through my Amazon store. That'll help me out, which you can also find. And by the way, how about an iTunes review? Oh, you can find my Amazon store at handgunworld.com. If you use iTunes, well, whatever podcast player that you use, how about putting up a review on what you think of this show? And that kind of helps other people who are checking this podcast out for the first time. Share this podcast with somebody else. Word of mouth is so powerful. And please share this with somebody else if you think that it's something that they could benefit from. I keep it family friendly. I keep it down to earth. I'm not an industry insider. I'm not a SWAT guy. I'm not a TAC Ops guy. I'm not a special forces, you know, ex-military guy or anything like that, or an ex-law enforcement. I'm just a dude that takes my Second Amendment rights very seriously, but I'm an everyday guy like you. Let me close with one more real quick topic. And that topic is, what are you doing to make this world a better place? I'm a firm believer that one of the reasons why we've got these mass shootings now, these unexplainable mass shootings. I mean, we still can't explain why the guy in Vegas did what he did. We pretty much kind of know why the guy in Sutherland Springs, Texas shot people at church, but I think we've allowed our society to degrade to the point that it is. I think we've allowed too many people to think that killing is okay, or to think that senseless killing is not going to get them in that much trouble. You notice that so many of these people do these acts and then they kill themselves. And I can tell you what, if these people who did this, these people who did these mass shootings, and then they kill themselves, there's a special place where they are paying a horrible, horrible price for their actions. But you know what? Not enough people know that. They think that they can get off scot-free. They think that there's, you know, not going to be any consequences. Or they don't care about the consequences. How have we let our society get to this point? How have we not treated people that have mental illnesses? How have we let them fall through the cracks? How come our government has failed us so bad that our government doesn't even, you know, report people? Our military doesn't even report people like the shooter at Sutherland Springs. Why have we allowed so many gun-free zones to exist? Right? I mean, you know, if people like this guy in Sutherland Springs, Texas, which, by the way, is only like about 40 miles from my house, 40 or 50 miles, something like that. You know, if he knew that in that congregation of 55 or 60 people, that there was a pretty good chance that a couple people were carrying a gun, hey, maybe things would be a little bit differently and turned out a little different. He wouldn't have tried that. You know, thank God for Stephen Williford, who got his AR-15 and shot the bad guy. You see, thank God for the good guy with an AR-15 that politicians don't want you to have. How have we allowed these politicians to do this kind of stuff? You know how we've done it? Because we don't vote against them. That's why. Because not enough people. Because, oh my God, we don't want to talk about politics. We can't talk about politics when you're in family settings. Right? What do people say? We can't talk about politics and religion. Too divisive. Why? Why won't you talk about politics and religion? So what if they're divisive? At least talk about moral values. At least talk about how, you know, this is senseless, rotten, stuff that we should not tolerate in this country. People killing each other like this. And it's not the gun. It's the people killing each other. What are you doing to help make this a better place? If you have small children, what are you doing to help raise those children the proper way so that when they become an adult, they don't ever think about doing something like these mass shooters? Like it says in Proverbs, train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is older, he will not depart from it. That's so true. What are you doing to help other people? What are you doing to reach out to other people? What are you doing to, you know, help people realize that, hey, it's not a good thing to be watching Hollywood movies that show that it's okay to just be, you know, senselessly without any consequence killing people? Yeah, you might not agree with all this, but, you know, it's how I feel, and I'd love to get your feedback on all that too. So, that wraps up this episode. I'm Bob Main. You've just listened to another episode of the Handgun World podcast, where I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Remember, if you want to bring out the best in people, you first have to see the best in people. And please don't hear one of the loudest sounds that a shooter hears. That's a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe. I'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.